Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Ali LaRouge podcast on the Blood Red Channel, bringing you the view from the terraces at Liverpool FC.
Hello and welcome to an episode of Ali LaRouge. Now I'm standing in, it's not Peter Hooton's dulcet tones you can hear, it's me, Neil Fitz, standing in for Peter. But we have three great guests who are going to discuss everything connected with Liverpool Football Club, including something that might have happened on Sunday, I can't remember now. Ella Hooton is here, Peter's daughter. How are you, Elle?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Your dad a busy bee?
Yeah, he's away at the moment, so we're standing in for him, aren't we?
More than enough, aren't we? Kayleigh Brand is here as well. Hi, Kayleigh, how are you?
Hello, I'm good as well. Good after Sunday.
Absolutely. And Edward Kay is here as well. Ed, how are you?
Yeah, good. As Kayleigh says, all good after Sunday. It's all smiles, isn't it?
It's all smiles. Well, let's get cracking with that. I mean, thank you, first of all, for downloading this podcast and all the other podcasts as well, Poetry in Motion and all the podcasts on the Blood Red umbrella. This is Ali LaRouge, of course. Sunday. So just before we get kicking off, I was driving home on Sunday before the kickoff, and all the media, all the conversations were talking about this, you know, this launch day for Newcastle United. Liverpool versus Newcastle would seem to be, this is the day that we're going to see how good Newcastle is and their march towards the title. And I was so wound up when I got out the car before that kickoff. It just seemed like everyone had written Liverpool off before the kickoff, Ella, hadn't it? And because they're now this super rich club, Newcastle, they seem to be the only ones destined to take the crown from Man City. Like, we haven't been trying to do it for ages and did it once. So all the hype must have really wound everyone up. How were you feeling before kickoff?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a pretty even game. To be honest, I wasn't like, I was seeing like yourself, Newcastle were like heavy favourites and stuff. I was just thinking, like, they haven't really recruited that many players this season so far. And I feel like we've bought well with our couple of signings. So I didn't understand that really with them being favourites so much. So when I was like, going into the game, I was fairly confident that we'll get a result there. Obviously, St. James's Park isn't not an easy place to go, but I was confident in myself, in the team, that we could go there and get something.
And Ed, what about you? Because, I mean, obviously, Newcastle known for being quite a pacey side as well, aren't they? And then, you know, you've got Anthony Gordon's been added to them, and he's got a lot of pace on the wings, a lot of pace through the middle as well. Obviously, Liverpool testing out, well, not testing out, but sort of, you know, new signings in Szoboszlai and, of course, McAllister. So it was going to be a tricky day, wasn't it? We all felt like that as Liverpool fans. It was going to be a tricky day. It was going to be a tough game. We knew it wasn't going to be an easy game. But how were you feeling before the kickoff? And were you confident in the Liverpool victory? I know the whole thing went bananas very quickly, but how were you feeling before that? Did you think that we had enough to cope with Newcastle?
Well, you touched on the pace there. I have to say, Anthony Gordon and Isak as well. I think Isak's quality... I think they had me worried going into the game, obviously knowing that Konate probably almost certainly wasn't going to play, and it was probably going to be Matip, who looked so leggy in pre-season. Obviously, he wasn't at full fitness then. I was pretty worried going into it, to be honest. And I mean, like the first 5 minutes, everything that went on with Trent, I'm sure we'll get into that later. I mean, just it didn't really help my nerves. So yeah, going into it, I think mentally I'd sort of prepared myself for, you know, if you come away from St. James's Park with a point, like, it's not the end of the world. If you come away from Stamford Bridge and St. James's Park with 2 points in from, you know, your opening few games, it's not the end of the world. And obviously it ended up getting a win. So it was a pretty good day.
Yeah. And Kayleigh, I mean, you know, the start of the game, the first couple of minutes in, I mean, the first, we'll talk about the refereeing and in general the refereeing in the Premiership so far, because I think it's been the worst I've ever seen. But that it was John Brooks refereeing it, and the first couple of minutes Trent gets a ridiculous yellow card on the back of what was a push in the back, clearly, as he's sliding away, throws the ball back onto the pitch, yellow card, which immediately the first, you know, you're in the first 4 or 5 minutes of a match, you give, you know, one of the defenders a yellow card. And then he goes on, and then a couple of minutes later, obviously, with the Anthony Gordon, I mean, you know, he's known for his diving, isn't he? Let's be honest with you. He made the most of it, but that could have been a player down, a player out before Van Dijk got dismissed. I mean, a referee, and we'll go back onto the game, but the referee in the first half by John Brooks was some of the worst refereeing I've ever seen. And are we just biased Liverpool fans, or was that? It just seems to me that the Joe Linton was running around elbowing people and everything. There was nothing happening, Kayleigh, was it? So the first half, certainly, but the first 10 or 15 minutes of the first half, it was watching through your fingers time, wasn't it?
Well, I was waiting on Joe Linton to get booked, so I'm even angrier at the fact that he didn't get booked. No, but I'm glad you asked me this, because I get so frustrated about it, because they're so important to the game. And for me, he changed that entire game within the first couple of minutes, because for me, you know, like we talked about before, with everything that was going on before the game, it's, you know, Newcastle's time to shine and Liverpool are going to drop off and all the rest of it. That's St. James's Park. St. James's Park is known for being this big rowdy place with all these Geordies in. You know it's going to be a good atmosphere. Crowd are going to be up for it. They're going to be on the back for every tackle. And then in the first one, to me, that's a yellow card to Anthony Gordon. It's as simple as that. Like, everyone says, don't they? You're playing these big games, leave your mark on the first tackle. Now, he's gone and done that. Got away with it. Not only that, then this new rule, whatever people think about it, but you throw the ball away and then Trent gets booked. So then everyone's laughing at him. The crowd are all on his back. And then he's frustrated because he knows that he's been fouled. Then he knows that he's got to go the entire game up against Anthony Gordon running at him, which is going to make you think, oh, now, you know, it's second guessing everything that you're going to do. Couple of minutes later, he goes, you know, shoves him slightly, if you like. But, you know, and arguably, you know, he could have been sent off. I personally think the only reason he didn't send him off was because he knew the first one wasn't a foul. But then that changes the whole game. And then I think that, to me, I think it got into Trent's head then. So then, I mean, I've never seen Trent do that in my life, where the ball just runs under his foot. So to me, I think it was in his head. He's frustrated. He's thinking about all these different things. The ball comes to him, it runs under his foot, and there you go, ahead and score. Then I also think on top of that, then you're frustrated the whole team then. And then is that why maybe Van Dijk, you know, maybe did make that challenge, which he, you know, could have potentially done better at. But the referee, by making that, and, it, you know, he wouldn't mind if it was 50-50 or whatever, it was a blatant foul on Trent Alexander-Arnold, simple as that. And he changed that whole game because he made an incompetent decision so early on. And it's they cannot get away with it any longer. We're 3 games into the season, and you've had a howler at Man United. You've had a howler with McAllister getting sent off. We were talking before, we can't remember what the other one was. There was another howler in another game, and then another howler in our game with Trent. So it's so important to the game, and there's got to be accountability. Something has got to change with the referees, because they're so important to the game, and they're changing and ruining so many of the games to me. And it's, you know, it can't carry on.
It's consistency, isn't it? I think one of the other ones I can think of is the Rashford penalty, which was another howler as well. I mean, you're talking about referees who, after the United game, I think John Brooks was part of it, they were dropped. And then we had the McAllister situation, where you've got, you know, Paul Tierney is VAR and a decision backing it up that the FA are completely dropping. Ellen, I think it's just this consistency thing, isn't it? Because as Kayleigh said, you know, you're waiting for Joe Linton was just running around bullying everyone, or trying to anyway, when he wasn't rolling over cramp. Doesn't get nowhere near a yellow card. You've got Liverpool players down. I mean, Trent's under the spotlight anyway at the moment, isn't he? A lot of Liverpool players are. We've raised the bar, and as fans, we expect a certain thing from Liverpool. And rightly or wrongly, there's a lot of speculation over where Trent's supposed to be playing. I mean, for the young lads, young shoulders, he's got a lot on his mind. I need to get yellow carded straight away like that. You can see when that ball went under his leg that he just wasn't at it at the time. But it's just a consistency, Elliot, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, if you're going to do that, you know, Joe Linton, Anthony Gordon, both threw a ball away after a decision. Yeah. Didn't get it. It's just that as a fan, you want the consistency, don't you?
It's every week now. Like, every week there's something else. There's coming out with apologies, saying, oh, sorry, and then the refs being taken out the games. And obviously an example from last season is Robertson getting elbowed by the linesman. And it was just like an investigation happened and nothing happened after it. Like, it was literally an apology and that was it. He didn't get any punishment. But if that was Andy Robertson elbowing the linesman, like Mitrovic got banned for 8 games for pushing a referee. Obviously, if Andy Robertson's done that to the linesman, Andy Robertson's getting banned for 8 games. So what I don't understand is, where's the consistency in it all? Like, they're so protected and it actually annoys me. Like, or every game, like, they're protected even by, like, having Mike Dean on the telly and having refs speaking about it. Like, they're protecting their mates and he come out saying something about last year where he didn't send Anthony Taylor to the monitor because he's his mate. Like, what? When does... And then he's had to come back out and say, oh, I didn't mean it like mate. I meant colleague. Like, no, you meant it. You didn't want to send your mate to the monitor because he's your mate and you didn't want to make his day even worse because he was having a howler of a game. But yeah, so what I think is, you know that the refs are bad in this league because they don't get hardly any European games. Like, when we're playing in Europe, the refs are like half all right, aren't they? Like, there's not many decisions that, like, every week in the Premier League, there's a decision that in one game that goes against a team, and there's always an apology coming out. But that's why these refs don't get picked for European games. I think Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver are the only ones that ever get picked. They don't get picked for big finals or anything like that. Something needs to change. Every week I'm sick of, like, moaning about it and people say, oh, it's just because Liverpool this and that. No, it's every team are getting it, and like, people are coming out to speak about it now, but it's actually making me angry because like, well, I'm just sick of going on about it, because like, every week there's new refs, like, and you think, oh, it's always Paul Tierney as well. What happened with Klopp? And he questions his integrity last year, and ever since then we haven't had, well, I didn't think we were getting decisions before that, but it's gone even worse since that happened with Paul Tierney, 100%.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, I definitely think it's an accountability thing, Ed, isn't it? Because like Al has just said, there just doesn't seem to be any accountability. And I can't tell you how many times, I don't tweet anymore, pretty much, or X, whatever you call it now. because you end up, you know, you put a tweet, you put a message out, and then, you know, 4 days later at 4 a.m, some plonkers come on bevied and start to give you a stick, you know what I mean? So the amount of times I was going to go, this ref, but you know you're going to get back a load of ass, shut up, Tony, because you're a red. But there were moments there, Ed. I mean, I was watching it with my kids, and there are moments where my kids are kicking off all the time. But there was a moment where I thought, this, it's hard to defend what he's doing. If you, surely neutrals can see it, that he's just letting stuff go. And Ella's just made the point there of Klopp, you know, questioning the integrity of Tierney. Tierney was VAR with the guy who elbowed Robertson in the Bournemouth game. And there just doesn't seem to be any accountability, does it? And you're looking at it. We'll go on to how it changed the game. And I think it's probably galvanised this Liverpool side in a way that we couldn't hope for anymore, really. But it's just up until that point, that could have gone any way. And that's before the decision on Van Dijk, which for me is a yellow card all day. It's never a straight red, as Katie said, in a big game that just ruins the balance and the momentum. Where's the accountability at?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that they're just so infallible is one of the things that winds people up so much, because, you know, you might not tweet anymore. I'm sure a few of us do, and we can complain as much as we want, and nothing's going to change. You know, VAR has come in, and has it really changed anything? All it's done, in my view, is shine a bigger microscope on just how poor the referees are, because they've got all the replays, and they're still getting like just easy decisions wrong. I mean, you know, obviously it's not a VAR issue, the Trent Alexander-Arnold thing, but how that isn't a free kick in the first place. He's right there. He gets a shoulder barge right in the back and then throws the ball 3 meters away, back onto the pitch, really, barely even away, and gets a yellow card in like the third minute. And then, which is, I mean, that's the wrong decision from the referee. He then probably should get a second yellow card, really. If he's not got the first one, that he's getting a yellow card for what he does to Gordon. So he's then got that decision wrong. But I've got no sympathy for him, because the reason he's got that decision wrong is he's painted himself into a corner with the first bad decision. And now he's like, I can't send him off after 5 minutes when the first yellow card was so dubious and this one's a bit dubious. So he ends up getting both decisions wrong, and nothing's going to happen for it. I mean, the Van Dijk one, I think it's 50-50. I think that one all depends on, do you think Isak is that a clear goal scoring opportunity? And I can see that one both ways. I think that's one where once he's given it, it's not going to get overturned. Had he given a yellow card, I don't think they would have sent him to the monitor, because that's just the way it goes. But yeah, I think the frustration just comes from the fact that nothing changes. I mean, Van Dijk now looks like he's going to get another game, doesn't it? For saying what everyone thinks about the referees, really. And it's just because he's been caught on camera doing it. But yeah, it's just frustrating. And as everyone says, it's every weekend now, isn't it?
Yeah, and also... Okay.
No, I just wanted to make a point of, like, it's all well and good, like, talking about it, isn't it? But then is there answers to the question of, like, well, what do we do about it? And we were talking before, weren't we? And we were like, you know, would it help if they come out and after the game and, you know, have to explain? It's like that, you know, the managers have to do it, don't get the players. Well, why did you make this decision? What did you think about that? What can't they? I mean, they won't, because it'll make them even worse. But, you know, would that not help come out and explain your decision? Like, explain what you've seen, why did you make that decision? And, you know, half the time I think, you know, if somebody just went, you know, I've made a mistake, then okay, but there's nothing. It's just you make a highlight, you know, you impact the game so much, and then we leave it. It's like we were watching the Women's World Cup, and on the big decisions, when they were sent over to the screen, they then had a mic that went round the stadium, and they had to explain to the crowd why they'd made that decision. Now, whether that'd make a difference or not, but at least it's something. You know, there's something more that, you know, needs to happen, where I just think they get away with it. And like we said, but they're so protected. Like, is there something else that we can do? There's got to be an answer to reform the way it's run.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. In the World Cup, and also as well other sports. I mean, rugby has been doing it for years. Yeah. Cricket's been doing it for years. It just gives that extra responsibility to a referee, where they have to explain themselves in the moment. But what gets me as well is the media don't pick up on any. There doesn't seem to be any scrutiny by the media. And you got Match of the Day of the night. You know, you can see the Van Dijk, whether you think it's a yellow or a red. I mean, first of all, that move in slow motion is Isak standing on Van Dijk's foot. No one's mentioned that. And now you're seeing that in slow motion with the VAR. So why aren't you seeing that and taking that into account of the fact that Van Dijk's next move is to sweep across the ball, go through the ball and through the player? So it's the accountability, I think, as well, Kayleigh, isn't it? And the fact that, you know, the media have a responsibility as well to start saying, well, hang on a minute, this is a mistake. And yet it all just seems to be brushed under the carpet. And by Match of the Day, you've got Alan Shearer just talking about all the things that Liverpool did wrong.
But yeah, these are the same refs that watched the McAllister challenge a couple of times on VAR and decided, yeah, that's still a red card, and then come out a couple of days later, oh, we've overturned it. Like, I just don't understand it.
But this is what I mean. This is why I think there needs to be more accountability. There needs to be more pressure on them to get, like, I always say, if I made the mistakes that they make in my job, I'd be sacked, or I'd be under review, or there'd be something that would happen. But these get maybe... Oh, we'll take you off a game for a couple of weeks, and then they get put straight back in, and then a couple of weeks down the line, they're making the same mistakes. Like, if they had to come out, you know, when they make those VAR decisions, like the Van Dijk one, I agree with you, Neil. Like, to me, his movement is towards the ball. It's not like he's gone to trip him or he's gone to push him over. His whole motion is, he would have got that ball. I mean, he did get the ball, didn't he? So it's not... He's not tried to foul him. He's tried to win the ball. Yeah, okay, he's gone through him, but he's gone through him because his foot's landed where it has. So why can't they come out? And this is why I think we need to speak about it. There needs to be, like you said, there's no coverage about it. There needs to be more that's happening, because they're ruining the game. Come out and explain, after you've made that decision, why you've made that decision. And then people would review it, and then they'd go, what's he talking about? that makes no sense. We can't have somebody like who has those, that's what your thought process is, in charge of the game.
Yeah, it's just silly little things as well. You can go on for this. I mean, is it Jason, whatever his name is, the second to Eddie Howe?
God,
standing in the zone where they're just not allowed to be. And it's just little windy things. We go sit down in the bunker, you know, and it's just little windy things like that that just annoying. It's like, well, why are you setting up rules and just not backing them up?
Yeah, and they brought Howard Webb, didn't they, on to Monday Night Football? I think it was a few months ago. I think it was the end of last season. I can't remember when it was, actually. And he literally was showing, like, decisions that he let us listen to the audio between the ref and the VAR. But every game that he showed was decisions that make the referee look good. Like, there were so many decisions that season were bad. Didn't show any of them, and everyone was tweeting going like, it just makes the referees look good. They're never ever going to take accountability because, like you said, no one in the media will come out and say, do you know what, this is an absolute disgrace, every week it's happening now. But yeah, it's just something needs to change, like Kayleigh said. Something needs to be brought in where the questions after the game, or I don't know, something different, because it's just going to carry on, isn't it, until something changes.
Doesn't seem to be, I don't think it's going to change at all. All right, well, listen, let's just go on to the game then, because at that point, Ed, we are a goal down after 25 minutes, a man down. Now, bear in mind as well, putting into the mix the fact that you've got McAllister and Zlobislav who are still trying to bet their way into this team. You've got Joel Matip who makes his first appearance and in a huge game like that. And then Virgil van Dijk gets sent off. At that point, we can all be forgiven for thinking this is probably going to be one of those days, but in reverse, in the complete opposite of what it ended up being. So a massive, massive strength of character from Liverpool, wasn't it, Ed, to sort of hunker down and get that result. But we'll get on to the result. But the way they started playing after that, just frustrated Newcastle and showed massive character, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, when we went a man down, I was pretty worried, to be honest. I thought we were going to be on the end of a bit of a hiding. But, when Almiron hits that volley in the box and Alisson makes that save, if that goes 2-0, I think we probably lose 4, maybe 5. We might have got one goal back, but I think we'd have really got hammered, which is just, I mean, another example of the benefits of having the best goalkeeper in the world by a country mile playing for you. I mean, it's just an unbelievable save at 1-0. To keep us in it. And yeah, I mean, that was sort of a springboard really from there. I mean, you mentioned Szoboszlai. He did the running of two men. So it was basically like we had 11 anyway. His engine, I mean, we heard all the reports about at the start of pre-season that he'd basically won all the lactate tests, things like that. Everyone was really impressed with his fitness. But I mean, he's really shown it those couple of games when we've gone down to 10 men. I mean, his engine's just unbelievable. And yeah, Liverpool just... you can just never really write them off, can you? And everyone was saying on commentary, and I would imagine everybody was thinking the exact same thing. You know, if Liverpool can get to 70, 75 minutes and it's still 1-0 and they're in the game, with the amount of firepower they've got, what they've got on the bench, who they can bring off the bench, you know, they're always going to be in the game. And as it happens, it was Darwin Nunes. But before that, I mean, Jota and Elliot both came off the bench. I thought Elliot was really good off the bench. You know, he gets a lot of criticism, but I think he's such a useful player for Liverpool, and he's probably not going to see as many minutes as he did certainly at the start of last season when he started out as many games in a row. But he was really good off the bench. Jota was good off the bench, and then obviously Nunes came off the bench and did what he did. But yeah, it was just such a memorable performance and a memorable win all round, really, wasn't it?
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, well, Kayleigh, Ed makes a good point there. That save by Alisson, you know, it was a double-handed save. If you look at it again, he hits it from, it comes off one hand to the other. And then he's even got the presence of mind to try and get it onto the bar and over. I mean, if there's a better save this season, then I'll be very, very surprised, because that was, and do you think that, as Ed just said, do you think maybe that was the moment where I know they were galvanising anyway, but because we've lost Henderson, because we've lost Milner, because we've lost those players who had the ability on the pitch to draw everyone together. And we don't really have that experience now, particularly with Van Dijk off the pitch. I know Robbo was still there, but do you think that's the moment, Kayleigh, when Liverpool thought, this isn't going your way. We're going to make sure this doesn't go your way. Because that that would bring anyone together to save like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we will never see a better goalkeeper in all our lifetime. We talk about him so much. He's even better than what we talk about. He is unbelievable. He's good with his feet. He's good with his sick. Everything. He's just perfect. Like when we seen him at the kit launch, didn't we? And I was like, I love you. Like, you are just the greatest man in the world. Like, he's so good. And, you know, you talk about, don't you, players, like, leading on the pitch. You know, like, I remember Carragher and Gerrard used to always say, like, Carragher was the mouth, weren't he? He was all like that. But Gerrard led by example on the pitch. And, you know, that's an example of Alisson doing exactly that, isn't it? It's like, you look at him and you think, I read something, I think he's made like 15 saves already or something, like something ridiculous. And you look at him behind you and you think, you always think you've got a chance when you've got him behind you, because he pulls out these saves that you just think, how has he done that? But I agree. I think if that would have went in, that would have changed the whole game. So I think it was so key that he saved that and he put it out, that we then went in at half time, only 1-0 down, to come back out and go, you know, we can have a go at this. But I agree. I think, I don't even know how you say his name, Szoboszlai. When I seen that number 8 run into the box, and I was like, oh my God, we've got a player. Like, my number 8 is doing box to box sprints. Like, what a dream. Like, I think, you know, like you said, we've played what, 1.5 games now with 10 men, and it doesn't feel like that. When we're playing 90 minutes, when we do finally get through a game 90 minutes with 11 players, and you can see what he does, like, I'm excited to watch him play because I think he's unbelievable. And I also agree that the subs that we made did change the game, give you that bit of thing. We got in so much after we made those subs, and I was sitting there, and you know, everyone says, oh, getting a point, Newcastle and Chelsea is good, but I'm sitting there going, where's that mentality from a couple of years ago where, no, you want to win the league, they're the games that you've got to win. And, like, why not? They're only 1-0 up. We're getting a few chances. We went through. Darwin knew that if he would have made a better touch in the first couple of minutes when he come on. Salah got in as well, didn't he? And I was like, no, like, let's go for it. Let's go for it. And I think then once we got that first one, then we did do it, didn't we? We were like, no, we've got them here. We can. They're on the back foot. And, yeah, I just think it's hopefully, you know, going to give us that bit of a boost now going into obviously the next couple of games, because you know, everyone was made up, weren't you? Seeing the crowd, you're seeing everybody all over Twitter, and yeah, I just think it was one of those performances where you just go, do you know what, we've had everything thrown at us there and we've come away, and it's a performance that you're proud of. And yeah, no, I was made up.
I think well, hopefully we'll look back at that performance and that result and look back and know that was the moment that this team really believed in itself again. Because Ella, Kayleigh just mentioned it. We were lucky enough to be at the kit launch a couple of weeks ago, and we saw Szoboszlai, who is, by the way, a unit. He's a big old boy, isn't he? I mean, for someone so fast, so agile, and so strong, he is a big lad. But we also saw Alisson come out, and then in him, you've got a really humble, he speaks so eloquently. And we saw that when his father passed away, and he talked about how people supported him. And when he talks, you listen, and we watched him. He went out with his guitar and was playing a lay, lay, lay. And you just feel, don't you, Nana, that we're lucky that when players get Liverpool and Liverpool get players, it's a bond that is very, very hard to break. And you feel with Alisson, don't you? He's one of a few, definitely, in this club. But you feel with Alisson, certainly, that he would absolutely march till his last breath for this club. And we saw it there on Sunday, didn't we? And he's an incredible leader, an incredibly humble guy, and boy, what a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I love him. I at the kit launch, I had to tell him, I just went to him, you're the best goalkeeper ever. I'm cringing at myself now, and he just smiled, and I was just like, oh. But yeah, he's like, honestly, I can't even explain him. Me and Kayleigh just love him, don't we? But every game that we play in, a team will get a chance, and he always seems to just save us, doesn't he? There's always a moment in the game, but like Kayleigh said before, about we've had 15, I think he's had to make 15 saves already in 3 games, which is quite worrying in the defensive part of the game. But obviously having Alisson there, it's just a brick wall, isn't it? Like, he's just so reliable in these one-on-one situations. We've just got a chance all the time. But and Szoboszlai as well, yeah, he's great, isn't he? Just so energetic, and I've just like the new midfield is working well together. I think we just need a few more bodies in, and then because I always say, like, I don't feel like we're that far off, to be honest. It's always with a few players short, but we're the only team. I personally, I've watched a lot of the games. I've watched mostly every game, not every game, I'm lying, but I've watched most games the start of the season, most top six teams, and I can't really see. Arsenal don't look great. They struggled against Forest, and United look, I can't even, like, they look poor. Like, they look absolutely poor. They should have been beaten by Wolves. If Wolves had a goal scorer, they would have lost that game. They got beat by Tottenham. Newcastle, they do look, they done well against Aston Villa, obviously lost against us and City, but the only teams that are looking good at the moment is obviously Man City, but even that, they struggled against Sheffield United. So if we just, like, we're not that far off. So if we, the last couple of days, the transfer window, if we just get it right and maybe bring a few more bodies in, we're not that far away. I don't think our squad personally, and we've got one of the best managers in the world. It's just the time to, we could win something this year. We could win a few trophies. We just need to get it right off the pitch as well.
Well, as we speak, we are not far from the transfer window closing. We'll go on to transfers in a bit, but Ed, just going back to the game there. I think Klopp, for me, is one of the best half-time managers I've ever seen. I mean, I think you get in at half-time, you're often, more often than not now, you see him sprinting off down the tunnel because he's got things to set up, PowerPoint and all that. No, or something to throw. But we get to half-time there, and you just feel like you've got half a chance, haven't you, when he gives a talk. There seems to be a different approach in the pool. I mean, we've mentioned Alisson's saves. He made seven. It's the most he's made in a single game, apparently. But apart from that, we must highlight the fact as well that, you know, Gomez came on when he probably wasn't expecting to get a game for Diaz. We must say that you know, Matip and Gomez and then Kwanzaa a bit later on in the game did well, because second half there, apart from the Almiron run that hit the post and the Almiron lifting his leg and knocking it over the bar, kind of kept them down. We kept them snugged a little bit, didn't we? And then it was the perfect time to do a counter. So it was a fantastic second half performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think his ability to sort of impact a game after it's actually started, you know, and before the final whistle is unparalleled. I mean, you say half-time manager, obviously that's a big part of it, but the substitutions he makes as well, there's just, I've always got so much faith that if Liverpool go into a game and they're one or maybe two, depends on the game, down at half-time, you know, there's just so much faith that Klopp's built up over the years now that he is going to right whatever's been going wrong in the first half, and if he doesn't like what he sees when he sends them back out there for the second half, then he's not going to be afraid to change it. And more often than not, when he does change things, it's to the better, and it's for a positive for the team. I mean, the amount of games, it's just countless where like you say, we've gone in at half time, maybe he's not like what he's seen, and he's been able to sort of put a rocket up everyone's backsides and get him going again, and like I say, if he hasn't liked what he's seen, then he's changed it, and more often than not, those substitutes will go on to contribute and change the game, as Nunes did, as Jota did, as Harvey Elliott did in that game against Newcastle.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Absolutely, you could also, Kayleigh, couldn't you, probably throw in a little bit of Eddie Howe pomposity there, didn't you? Because his changes, by contrast, were poor, weren't he? It looked like a game they had 1-0. Yeah, they're not going anywhere. They're going to spend the rest of this game trying to keep us out. We'll just take off, you know, huge players for us, and then sort of left the gate open a little bit. But we've got to mention, Ed did mention before, Harvey Elliott. He's been coming on and he's really been pressing, hasn't he? He's been like a little terrier, and doing it really, really well. Certainly provided his block, provided the second goal, the winning goal. But between him and Jota, it's almost like he's better going in more central, isn't he, than on the wing, because he kind of disrupts that flow between Trent and Salah. And when he's been coming on and darting up the middle here, he's been more effective.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, I don't remember when we spoke about it, but you remember before he got injured, I remember always saying about, like, the combination play that he had with Salah. Like, it was brilliant. I think in the first couple of games, they'd had the most combinations in, like, the whole league or somewhere around that. And like you said, if you put him in the middle, and he can still do that with Salah. He's got that with Trent, and then Trent and Salah still got their thing in. But now I agree, like, he's come on, and the one thing I always think with Elliot is that he tries, doesn't he? I know that sounds ridiculous, but he'll just run and run and run and run. And like you said, he's only little, isn't he? He's like a little terrier. But yeah, I think we spoke about it a couple of times where he's a player where you want him to come off the bench. Do you know what? I personally don't think he should be starting for us. But as a player coming off the bench, I don't mind it at all. And I think when he's come off the bench this season, I'm like, no, yeah. Like, you know, you feel like he's made an impact. I'm made up for him because I do think he loves Liverpool and I do think he'd do anything for us. But I just think he's still young and it's a lot of pressure to be starting games for us, especially starting games for us after the year we've just had and all the troubles with the midfield last year. So him coming on for the last 20 minutes and coming on in that little central role where he can get about everywhere, I think he's been brilliant when he's come on. And like I said before, I think the changes that we made on Sunday absolutely blew them out the water. I mean, you know, okay, a lot of people say, don't you play against 10 men? And it's sometimes difficult, as stupid as it sounds, to play against 10. But then that's when it comes down to your manager and the changes that Eddie Howe made. If anything, they fell into our hands because it made it easier for us. It opened them up. And I think our changes were brilliant and made up for Nunes as well, because I think he gets a bit of stick. And, you know, for him to come on and finish the game off the way he did, hopefully it'll give him a bit of confidence going into the next few games. Because I think if he starts putting them chances away, you'd hate to play against them, wouldn't you? You'd absolutely hate to play against them.
Let's talk about the one known in our house as the Rottweiler, because he's just, you know, his first season at Benfica, he struggled. Second season, he blew it out the water. There's just something lovable about him. Liverpool fans, I mean, one of the things I love about Liverpool fans is they don't give stick out unless if you're a player, you play for Liverpool or you play for Liverpool. If you get stick off Liverpool fans, you've done something to earn that stick. They don't do it. They don't give stick out. They respect people. They clap former Reds onto the pitch. It's, you know, if you've done a Sterling and said you want to leave to win trophies and all that, well, or Michael Owen, then, you know, good luck to you, mate, because if you disrespect the club. The thing about Nunes is, Ella, from the moment he got here, it was just like they picked him up in Crocky Park or something, didn't it? There was just something about him that you just thought, he gets this club, he gets the excitement of it, he gets the honour of playing for them. And we all willed him last season, didn't we? And he made his stats weren't that bad. He missed a lot of chances, but boy, oh boy. I mean, that first goal is remarkable in every level, because he beats the keeper there, who is a very, very good keeper. He hits it with the outside of his boot, and it bends away from the keeper and into the bottom corner from that angle. I mean, it's just a phenomenal finish, isn't it? Second one as well. But we're all just hoping that this is a springboard. This could be a springboard for him, couldn't it? And give him the confidence. Yeah. And then the galvanising in with Alisson and stuff. He just loved every second of it. To hang on with 10 men is something. To win the game with 10 men is extraordinary. And he made a massive difference, didn't he?
Yeah, I just feel like he needs a run of games now just to prove himself. Like, obviously last season, we seen him being like very raw. I'd explain him as raw, like missing a lot of chances. But this season, I watched him in pre-season as well. He just looks much more clinical. I think the two goals that he scored the other day, I think if Nunes was going through one goal last season and he had them two chances, you'd think, oh, he's missing that. Like, something about him this season, I know we haven't played too much, but watching him in pre-season myself and them goals he scored, I just think now is the time to give him a little run of games and see how, because that could give him massive confidence the other day. And I was actually listening to a podcast, I think it was Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, and they were saying Gary Lineker was saying he expects him to challenge for the Golden Boot, which is, obviously, he's a proven goal scorer. He knows that he's got something there. Like, these players and everyone knows he's got something. He just needs to play now and just needs to finish the chances when he's playing. But he's obviously very raw. And like you said, in Benfica, he had a similar season. The first season, he was missing a lot of chances. And then the second season, he exploded. So I feel like if we just give him them run of games, that everyone believes that he can do it. He's got all the attributes. He's strong. He's fast. He's got everything. He just needs them run of games just to do it. And I hope to God that he comes in clutch, because I just we know there's a player in there. We just need to see it more.
Yeah, and he's got to, surely, Ed, he's got to have been to start against Villa, hasn't he? Because if you've got someone that high after that game and that excited and that confident, you're not going to bench him against Villa, Ed, are you? Because that would be such a backward step. You need to let him go. If he goes against Villa and doesn't do nothing, you can always hike him. But you can't surely not play him along with Diaz and Nunes now that he's in that, hasn't he, surely?
Yeah, I think all the stars have aligned for him, really, because, I mean, Gakpo I feel really bad for, because obviously he's had to sort of start in that eight position where obviously Klopp is insisting that he can play there, but it's not his favourite position. And then he gets stuck up front in the last game, wasn't really too great and ended up being subbed off. So I think it's got to be Nunes, really. I mean, what's the point of having five realistic first team top quality attacking options if you're not going to play the ones that are in form when they're in form? And I mean, after that, he's obviously going to have a spring in his step. There's going to be a bounce behind him. And I think if he's not starting against Villa, he's going to be thinking, well, what more can I do, really? I mean, there's not much more we could have asked for him in that cameo that he had. He's given everyone a memorable moment. He's given Jurgen Klopp a memorable moment, and he's made him look quality bringing him off the bench. He's made him look like a genius. So, yeah, I'd be very, very surprised and a little bit disappointed if we didn't see him start against Villa on Sunday.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, and Kayleigh, you know, we saw the importance. There's a lot of transfer nonsense that comes on at these windows. A lot of them are usually agents leaking out stories to try and get wages up. That tends to be how it happens. But of course, we can't help but bite as Liverpool fans every time you reload your updates and it's, hey, who are we going for now? Obviously, Gravenberg is still something that, as we are doing this podcast, hasn't been officially announced yet, but it's something that looks like it's in the workings. We've got till midnight to do it. I think a lot of it relies on buying Paulinho as well, doesn't it, from Fulham? So there are pieces of the jigsaw there. But the importance of Salah to this team was highlighted, wasn't it, on Sunday? A lot of talk that he's going to be going here, he's going to be going there. I mean, the fact that he played often tells you that nothing's going on, because he wouldn't be in the side, would he? But the through ball for the second goal was just absolutely glorious, wasn't it? And like we said early on in this pod, with the firepower we've got, as Ella said, we're just a few little chess pieces away, aren't we? A couple of little players that can just galvanise it. And with those three, or that combination of the five, really, we can do a lot of damage this season, can't we? But Salah's fundamental, isn't he?
He's irreplaceable. You can't replace somebody like him. You can go on about his stats, and his stats are unbelievable, but it's the presence on the pitch as well, isn't it? I just think he's the whole thing. He's got... He contributes goals, he contributes assists, he makes defenders, they're worried when he's on the pitch, because he's got that potential to just snap and just be like, pull something out of the bag. But I also think he's got that leadership role as well. Like, you see all the videos that Liverpool put on Instagram and Twitter and things like that. Like, when Endo joined, you know, he goes in and just to say hello. And it's little things like that. He's got the whole package. I think he's absolutely irreplaceable, and there's no way we're selling him. And you'd like to think as well that he wouldn't want to leave. You don't. To me personally, if you've still got aspirations to win trophies, to win Premier Leagues, to win Champions Leagues next year when we're back in it, you know, you want those players, and you'd like to think that he's one of those players. He wants these records. He wants these trophies. Going to Saudi Arabia, that's not it. He earns a very, very good wage as it is with us. And you'd like to think he wouldn't want to go anyway. And, you know, I think, like you said, with going forward, like, I'm perfectly happy with our players. And, you know, if, like you said, if you just get those little covers, I'm happy with McAllister, Szoboszlai. Can't say this lad's name, but there's Gravenberg or whatever he comes in. You know, that's another one there. You've also got, can't say his name, but Badzicic or something like that. You've got him to come back in. I think he was brilliant. Thiago's there as well. So, you know, the pieces are starting to come together. I think maybe if you could, you know, get another cover at the back. But like you said, we're not that far off, and going forward, no problems. If those midfield players can start clicking, and, you know, obviously they've not played together, so once they've had a good run of games together, they'll start understanding each other better. And yeah, I think people have wrote us off a lot, and as Ella said, I don't think we're not that far off. And if we start clicking, who knows what could happen this season. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it more than I was a couple of months ago when the transfer window opened.
Yeah, just to interrupt, Salah's gone. Just had an update. Money joke.
Not a chance.
Not a chance. I mean, we've got Curtis Jones as well, who was putting a shift in towards the end of last season, wasn't he, as well? I think Ella, if there's anywhere, because it looks like Konate, who for me has been a monster so far. I think he's been solid. It looks like he's going to miss the Villa game as well. If we're going to be pinpointing anywhere, and we've had difficulty with transfer windows, we haven't handled them the best, let's be honest with you.
No.
If Gravenberg comes, then he looks like an exciting player. I saw him. He played well. He made 100 appearances for Ajax before he was 20. This kid's got something. He played well against us as well a couple of seasons ago. He looks really controlled. Looks like a good player. It's that. It's the back, isn't it? We've already talked about how many saves Alisson's had to make in three or four games. It's the back, and it's a left. And more importantly, a kind of a left-sided centre back that there's talking about Hip Kamke or something like that.
We can't say any of the names.
I call Slobby Slops because it's easier. We definitely, if there's any cover as well that we can get before 12, certainly with Nat Phillips just going on a four-month, inexplicably on a four-month loan to Celtic, it just looks like that's somewhere we need to cover.
It's mad. I read the stat. I think we've got the smallest squads in the league at the moment, and we're in the Europa League. We're playing Thursday, Sunday. We need a few more bodies in. Do you know what I don't understand? I just don't understand why every season we constantly leave ourselves short, every transfer window. Like, three out of our four centre-backs, so Matip and Gomez and Konate, they're all injury-prone. So we need to... I can't see us bringing a centre-back in now. We probably left it a bit late, but we needed to address it this summer. I just don't understand it. Like, so when we was on top, what we should have done is slowly rebuild the squad so we didn't have so much to do these coming years. So since Van Dijk, we've only bought one centre-back in Konate, and I'm not counting Kabach and Phillip, what's his name, Davis, because they were just loans islands. But I just don't understand why we always leave ourselves short, because we've had all these years with Klopp, and I don't know if it is Klopp or FSG or a bit of both of them. And sometimes I always hear like the journalists saying, oh, we're waiting for the right player. But obviously there's players out there that can improve us in defence, even if it's another player that won't be playing every week. But we have these injury-prone players, and it is worrying. So I was seeing like Man City won the treble last year. They lost Gundogan, Mahrez, Laporte. They brought in another name and I can't say, Gravial, Doku, Kovacic, and the signing Nunes. Obviously, I'm not saying we want to spend the amount of money that Man City spend, but I'm just saying, like, we've lost Fabinho, basically, and we've only brought in, and not being sly, he could come good, but we've only brought in Endo, which at the start of the window, we were going for Lavia. Endo's what, a 30-year-old player, which FSG don't usually buy players like that. But I don't think, in my head, I don't think he's the answer. I don't know. I'm not being sly. I don't want to write him off too soon. But I thought we'd go for a proven six. Obviously, we went for Lavia and he ends up choosing Chelsea because we messed them around too much. But it just shows it's just a bit mad at Liverpool at the moment. I can't really put my finger on what's going on behind the scenes, but I don't think this sporting director who lives in Ibiza is going to get kept on anyway.
Well, there was a rumour coming out about Tuitas that they missed out on. They could have got Andre, the guy from Fluminense. Mm. They could have got him on a release clause in his contract, but our sporting director was in Disneyland and didn't read the text. I don't know how true that is. But it would not surprise me at all.
It would not surprise me because I think he's only done two release clauses and so far, hasn't he? And every other deal, he's the Casado one. Actually, can't blame him for that. But the Lavia one, he's good at doing release clauses, but obviously didn't answer for Andre when he was in Disneyland by the looks of it.
I mean, he's probably like still 3 hours away from the ride, wasn't he? You're still 3 hours away. Bellingham's just become one. He's just become the first English player to win the Bundesliga Player of the Month or something. Mad, it's just to rub the salt in even deeper.
Bundesliga? La Liga.
Sorry.
Yeah. Going to say, is he still at Dortmund?
Yeah, he's still at Dortmund. Should
have bought him.
Well, Ed, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, Liverpool, Ella's just mentioned it. We don't know who's to blame. I know Klopp has been quoted in the past saying that he doesn't like big squads. He doesn't like buying players and putting them on benches. He likes players to play. And it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because there's got to be a bit of both to it, hasn't it? Because as Ellis just said, the stats speak for themselves. We've left ourselves short over the last three or four transfer windows to the point where it's really hindered our progress. Now it looks like we're doing it again. And he must be accountable at some level, mustn't he? Because we can't keep up with the City. Part of me doesn't really want to. There doesn't seem to be any loyalty with them. They just get rid of players left, right, and centre. Even the academy players they want to fling out. And I can understand where Klopp means that he wants people to play and he doesn't want them to bench. But you've got to have a squad, haven't you? And if we don't sign a defender, some backup defender by the end of by midnight, isn't it? It's a bit of a Cinderella one, isn't it? Then we're gonna be looking through our fingers again for the rest of the season. There has to be some accountability somewhere, shouldn't it, for Klopp?
Yeah, I usually stick up for them when it comes to sort of this argument that they've left us short in the transfer window. But this would be by far and away the most frustrating one, because I think it's so clear everybody knows what they now need. If Gravenberch is coming in, it's looking like he might be having a medical maybe tonight when we're recording this. By the time this goes out, it might be a Liverpool player. But everybody knows that they need a centre-back in addition to that. And I'm just hoping that they've not got Endo in with the idea that, because I think he actually, in the Bundesliga last year, he actually played more as a centre-back than as a defensive midfielder. So I'm hoping they're not just thinking they can sort of cheap out and play Endo there, because, I mean, I think he's like 5'9", 5'10", so I'm not having him in at centre-back at all. I mean, we've seen how that's gone with the Butcher over at United, and I think he's rubbish, isn't he? Let's be honest. I'm not having Endo at centre-back. So everyone knows that is what they now need to go and do. And are they going to do it? Probably not. They've left themselves too little time, because they've dilly-dallied over getting a six in this entire time ever since Fabinho and Henderson sort of left. But yeah, it is going to be, for me, the most frustrating case of them leaving us short. Because everyone says that the summer when they wanted Tchouaméni, they got left short. But I think that was a case of, did we really need a midfielder that desperately? We weren't doing too bad in the midfield department, and they pinpointed Tchouaméni as the one they wanted. He chose Madrid, which, fair enough, some people are going to do that. And Klopp said, right, well, we've not got my man, so we'll just let it go. That one, I think, was a bit forgivable because of the season they'd had before. But, I mean, this time around, if they don't go and sign a centre-back, and then we see any more injuries, you know, if Konaté gets injured for any serious amount of time, and then Matip has to play there, Gomez has to play there, both of them are injury-prone. We know that already. So that I think they are taking a really big gamble if these are the centre-back options that they're going into the season with.
Well, it won't be the first time they've done it, so that's the disappointing thing about it. Just as we're closing up this episode, 40, as we said before, €40 million fee has been agreed with Bayern Munich for Ryan Gravenberch. He's flying for the medical and will undergo medical and sign a 5-year deal. Should there be no issues? No issues? Oh, you're joking, aren't you? We can't do it without issues, can we? All right, Kaylee, Ella and Ed, first of all, just before we go, thank you for this. I've enjoyed it. I mean, I'm no Peter Newton, but I can have a go. What do you fancy for Aston Villa at home on Sunday? Now, a galvanised team, the Rottweiler up front. I'm trying to get that to stick. It probably won't. But if we get Nunes in there, do you fancy Villa, another strong team, but at Anfield, what are your chances? What are our chances, Kaylee?
Yeah, I think we're going to win every single game. That's always the way that I go with every game. Why would you not, though? You want to win every game, and especially at home. No, I do. That's always my thing. I never think we're going to lose. But I think I'm going to go. I'm terrible with these. If I was good at these, I'd have a lot more money. I'm going to go 3-1 to us.
Okay, 3-1. It's funny, isn't it? It's hard to get a nil at the moment, isn't it? So even if we're going for a win, it has to be one. It feels like it's going to be one down our end. Ella, 3-1. Kaylee's thrown in the hat. What do you fancy?
I was going to say 3-1 as well. Darwin Nunes, hat-trick. He's going to score all goals in front of the cop.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. Ed?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4-1 and Liverpool to actually finish the game with 11 men, hopefully.
Oh, hopefully.
That's a good start. All right, I'm probably going to go for 3-1 as well. I think it seems like it. Well, hopefully we'll get to the situation where we can throw a nil in for us, but just a win is good, and hopefully the upsurge now and that galvanised thing that we had there in Newcastle we can go on from. Ella Hooton, Kaylee Brand and Ed Okay, thank you very much, my friends. I hope you enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, always. Thank you.
Very good.
Always a pleasure.
Always good to talk about the Reds. So let's the Flying Dutchman is on his way over. Let's hope he can add a bit of steel to the midfield. And Enzo can grow about 4 inches and get in that centre-back position. This has been Neil Fitz, Ale LaRouche, sitting in for Peter Hooton and the lads. And I'll see you all again soon. And hopefully tune into A Poetry in Motion and all the other podcasts as well. Thank you very much. Up the Reds.
You've been listening to the Ale LaRouche podcast on the Blood Red Channel.